Okay, so we are back in session. We are taking on, I've got the things wrong all day, so let me just get this
number
one.
Six.
You know, it's great to have a good wingman to help you out. We're taking on item number six, which is the public hearing on Confusion Hill. And actually, Mr. Jeff Hale was the chair at that time. He was also acted as a hearing officer. So in our infinite wisdom, I'm going to pass this to Jeff Hale as the hearing officer to continue. So with that, Mr. Hale.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been instructed to speak into the microphone. I'll start with my opening statement. This is the time and place for the board to consider item six on the agenda, which is the issuance of an order for administrative civil liability to the California Department of Transportation for violations that occurred during the construction of the Confusion Hill Bypass Project. Caltrans contracted with MCM Construction Incorporated, who is also a designated party. A hearing took place June 23, 2011, on complaint R1-2009-0095, which proposed a civil liability of $1.5 million. At that time, I designated a hearing panel in the event that we lacked a quorum, and four board members were present and remained for the duration of the hearing. Board members heard relevant evidence and testimony to decide whether to issue an ACL order assessing the proposed liability, a higher or lower amount, or to reject the proposed liability. Two board members present today, Mr. John Corbett and Ms. Irene Tynes, did not attend the hearing. However, they have had the opportunity to familiarize themselves with the record and the proposed order and may vote on this item if they wish. In this matter, we separated the functions of staff between those who acted in a prosecutorial role by presenting evidence for this board's consideration and those who advise the board. Your advisory staff include the board's executive officer, Catherine Coleman, sanitary engineering associate, Lisa Bernard, and senior staff counsel, Samantha Olson. Consistent with the board member direction in closed session and subject to my review and approval, the advisory team reviewed each violation in detail and drafted the proposed order that was posted on February 15, 2012. Additional proposed changes in response to comments from the parties were posted on March 9, 2012. Advisory staff will present the order briefly and discuss any proposed changes. Following the advisory staff presentation, parties will have the opportunity to comment on the draft order. We provided direction for parties to limit their oral comments to 5 minutes, although I might allow more time if needed. Comments should be limited to the general acceptability of the order or possible technical corrections. Parties may not introduce new evidence. We will hear party comments from the prosecution team first, followed by Caltrans and then MCM. After comments from the parties, the board will have the opportunity to deliberate. And with that, I would like advisory staff to introduce the order and the proposed changes and the response to comments.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Lisa Bernard, and I serve this board as advisory staff in the Confusion Hill matter. As mentioned by Mr. Hales, since the hearing on this matter last June, the advisory team reviewed each alleged violation in detail and drafted a proposed order at the direction of our board members. Today, I'm going to give that brief overview. First, I'm going to talk about the draft order that was posted on February 15th. Some revisions made in response to comments from the parties, and then summarize the advisory staff recommendations for you. Am I echoing?
No,
I'm sorry.
Okay. So the original complaint included 296 alleged violations of the 401 certification and stormwater permit applicable to the Confusion Hill Bypass Project. The prosecution team grouped those violations into the 9 categories that you see here on the screen. And due to the large number of the alleged violations, advisory team had requested prosecution team to specify a unique identifier for each of those violations. And that way we had a point of reference so that all parties could discuss the violations individually. The prosecution team did assign a unique number in sequence for the violations in accordance with their chronological occurrence. And the proposed order uses a combination of those unique violation identifiers as well as these categories to maintain consistency. So in order to derive liability amounts for each violation and each category, advisory staff, at the direction of the board members, considered these relevant factors, among others, in the proposed order. So there were multiple violations of multiple permit terms for individual events. South Fork Ill River is impaired, as you know, for temperature and sediment, so that was taken into consideration. In some instances, discharges were cleaned up by the parties or by the defense team at the time, and so that was taken into consideration, as well as a prior history of violations, the toxicity, harm, and gravity of the individual discharges. So the draft order was posted for review and comment by the parties, as I mentioned before, on February 15th. And originally, we allowed 10 days for the parties to comment, but a five-day extension was granted to all the parties at the request of MCM, so a total of 15 days to comment. All three parties, MCM, Caltrans, and the prosecution team, submitted timely written comments, and those should be included into your agenda packages. And all the comments were considered, and where appropriate, changes have been made to the draft order, and you'll see those changes in the underlined strikeout format also included in your agenda package. Those changes and the proposed draft before you were posted on the web and made available to all the parties on March 9th, which was last Friday. So here's the meat of the matter, I suppose. In accordance with the categories, the prosecution team proposed liabilities are in the right-hand, well, the second to the right-hand column here, including liabilities for violations as well as proposed staff costs that were brought forward in the case in chief. No, in the original, yeah, in the case in chief last June. Then after we had the hearing and received direction from the board members, we basically, the changes in the liabilities are directly associated, for the most part, in taking multiple permit violations or multiple terms of the permit that were violated and condensing them into violation events. So that's where the majority of the reductions are actually seen. And also, originally when the case in chief, when the complaint was issued, the complaint indicated that there was $70,182 in staff costs that were estimated at that time, and no clear indication that that those costs would be continuing. And so we didn't add the additional staff costs that were proposed by prosecution team in the case in chief. So then we received, where am I? We received the comments on, and so what we have today is in the draft order that was posted on the 15th, we had added back in some violations that were previously conceded by the prosecution team. The defense team, both Caltrans and MCM, objected to adding those back in, and so they've been removed from the order because they argued that they didn't have time to or an opportunity to defend themselves at the hearing. Also, MCM made an argument that some of the turbidity violations were not as egregious as others because of the short duration and short length of the plume, and in deference to the gravity or of those particular violations, we also reduced the insufficient turbidity measurements by $15,000. Also, MCM pointed out that we had a duplicate violation, which we concur with and remove that. So that's where you see a difference here between the $470,000 liability that was proposed in the original draft order and the $405,000 proposed for violations after the response to comments. Really? Okay, well, I have more slides in my presentation than you do. So of the total liability that is ultimately adopted here, staff costs are obligated to go to the cleanup and abatement fund in Sacramento. And up to 100%, because we're working under the enforcement policy from 2002, up to 100% of the liability assigned for violations can be put into a SEP, a supplemental environmental project. And the order allows for the dischargers to work with the executive officer to devise a SEP, and there's a time limit of 30 days for a proposal to come before the executive officer. So our recommendations as advisory staff are that you would adopt order R1-2012-34 with a total liability of $475,182, and that we would encourage the dischargers to work with the executive officer towards an environmental project up to the full amount of the liability. And I'll take questions. Or not.
Thank you. Any questions? All right.
Great. Made my life easy.
I'd like to welcome our representative from the prosecution team.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and members of the Board. My name is Julie Macedo, and I'm Senior Staff Counsel in the Office of Enforcement, and I represent the prosecution team in this matter. Thank you, Lisa, for explaining the changes in the order and then the revised order that the Board is now considering. My comments are basically directed at both the order and the revised order in the event that this matter is appealed. It's my understanding that we are not here to review the panel hearing we had last summer with witnesses and the introduction of evidence, but instead to offer final thoughts on the revised order the Board issued for the parties' review a few days ago. The Board had issued an order for the parties' consideration, accepted technical corrections from all parties, and then reduced the recommended penalty pursuant to all of those comments. While I don't know if the Board's revised order represents its final say on the matter, this matter may be appealed, and I would like to use my time to state a few things for the record. I mentioned that I represent the prosecution team. The people on that team include Luis Rivera, David Leland, and Kason Grady. It does not include you yourselves, the Board members. You have been ably represented by the advisory team in this matter, Lisa Earle and Counsel Samantha Olson. I point that out because both Caltrans and MCM made much of the fact that the order penalized Caltrans and MCM for violations that they had previously conceded and then changed their minds. These inconsistencies prior to the panel hearing, admitting certain violations and then changing their minds, wouldn't be allowed in a courtroom setting, where once you admit something, you're stuck with admitting it. However, in administrative proceedings like this, there are differences. If there is evidence in the record, whether it be documents or photographs, that allows the trier of fact, that's the Board, to make a finding, even if the prosecution team hasn't focused on that particular piece of evidence. If that evidence is in the record, the Board can use it to support a finding. The regional board's finding isn't limited to what I've presented. To claim otherwise is both false and misleading. I'd also like to comment on staff costs. The prosecution team limited its request for staff costs to just a few critical people who worked on this matter, and in its technical comments submitted last month, removed the attorney time from consideration. The time spent trying to get Caltrans and MCM to come into compliance and drafting the complaint was more than $70,000, which was ultimately awarded to us by the advisory team and recommended to be awarded to us by the board. The time since then spent working with attorneys and bringing this matter to hearing was approximately an additional $60,000. That $130,000 includes no attorney time and was described in February 2011 briefing, which allowed both MCM and Caltrans to question Mona Doherty and Case and Grady about their time estimates on the stand at the hearing. The allowance of staff time is not based on an underground regulation, but is codified as an other matter as justice may require in Water Code 13385 and explained in the Water Quality Enforcement Policy, which was approved by the Office of Administrative Law in May of 2009. These costs are significant and an important factor in bringing dischargers into compliance. The project's 401 certification was issued in 2006. The complaint for this matter was issued in 2009, and this hearing, or this particular hearing today, is 3 years later. 6 years of staff time should be recouped as a cost of enforcement. A concept also discussed in the Water Quality Enforcement Policy, which to confirm is not an underground regulation, is that multiple parameters may be penalized. The board has discretion to issue penalties pursuant to the stormwater permit for violations that also violated the 401 certification. The 401 certification conditions were not overly duplicative and targeted to achieve different water quality goals. The main goal of enforcement proceedings of any kind is deterrence and ultimately compliance. When we hear that Mr. Pucci, who is general counsel and treasurer for MCM, that a $500,000 penalty is simply the cost of doing business, we know that we still have work to do. Viewing this order as the cost of doing business is inappropriate. MCM making unilateral decisions about bridge footings and dewatering basins, regardless of what the environmental impacts or what the project application and permit say, is inappropriate. The prosecution team feel like the regional board advisory team and the board itself really got it in drafting the proposed order, why this action was necessary, and why a message needed to be sent to both MCM and Caltrans. If contractors such as MCM continue to underbid environmental compliance, they'll find themselves back in front of regional boards all across the state. If Caltrans doesn't exert greater authority over such contractors, it too will bear the cost of such recklessness. We appreciate the opportunity to address the board and submit this commentary for your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Macedo. Any comments from board members? Okay. All right. Representative from Caltrans.
Thank you. Doug Jensen on behalf of Department of Transportation. At the outset, I wanted to reiterate that the department generally disputes the board's findings of liability and penalty amounts. We've been invited to comment on the general acceptability of the order, and I'll keep my comments today within that scope. We previously submitted written comments in the form of a letter dated February 29, 2012. Since the submission of that letter, the board has provided some additional information regarding the imposition of staff fees and costs. The board cites two bases for the imposition of these fees. The first is the 2002 enforcement policy. The second is Water Code Section 13385, subsection E. Neither of these provide a legitimate basis for the imposition of fees and costs. Turning first to the 2002 enforcement policy, Government Code Section 11425.50 provides that a penalty, like fees and costs, cannot be based on a policy unless it is adopted as a regulation pursuant to the APA. In other words, the penalty cannot be based on policy alone. Looking at the 2002 policy, it's clear that it addresses only costs, not fees. There's a distinction, in civil law between those two items. And for your reference, that distinction is described in Code of Civil Procedure Section 1033. Furthermore, costs in a civil arena are only available to a prevailing party, and the prosecution team is not prevailing party in this action. Turning now to Water Code Section 13385, subsection E. This statute does not discuss fees or costs. Had the legislature intended Section 13385 to act as a mechanism for the recovery of fees and costs, it would have said so explicitly. It did not. 13385 does discuss factors to be considered in imposing liability. Fees and costs are distinct from liability. For those reasons, the department respectfully requests that the board wholly eliminate any requirement that staff costs and fees be paid. Thanks.
Thank you. And MCM.
Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the board. I'm Sean Ungerford for MCM. I'd like to start just by thanking the board and staff members for the amount of time and effort put into this. We know as much as anyone what a complex situation this was. And so we also understand that a lot of people put in a lot of hours on the part of staff to kind of unravel this and sort through it. So we really do appreciate that. Thank you. We submitted written comments. We're just going to supplement them with a few oral ones on one particular topic, and that is the amount of liability that's been imposed for some of these violations. For many violations, the proposed order reaches quite high, and we appreciate the advisory team's exercise of discretion in reducing some of those, although still we're at the maximum or near the maximum of $10,000 per event for many of the violations that are listed in the proposed order. We want to make sure that the board doesn't lose sight of the circumstances surrounding these violations, which include good faith efforts to comply, which include the exercise of professional judgment on the part of the people working on the project, which is something that was absolutely required by the certification, and which also include unanticipated kind of one-off events that were not anticipated, that were purely of an accidental nature. We believe these circumstances must legally be considered under Section 13385 and the state's enforcement policy, and in a more direct way than it is in the current order. So just to illustrate this, I have a couple of examples. First, with respect to turbidity, as with the revisions, we now have four different events in the category of turbidity violations. For all of those, we have evidence in the record that best management practices, BMPs, were used to avoid or minimize turbidity. And just to focus on the most significant of these, there is an allegation of a cementitious discharge when they were trying to pour one of these CMPs. I think everyone would probably agree that's the most significant violation of this category. Now, at the hearing, we spent a good deal of time and effort with testimony and with images going through exactly how the CMPs were prepared and what sort of measures that the contractors put in place to avoid these sorts of problems, which included sandbags, filter fabric, drapings, the use of people there in the water constantly adjusting to a situation. Now, there's no evidence that at the time that these BMPs were put in place, the time the CMPs were being poured, that anyone on the ground from Caltrans standpoint or from MCM or anyone else in the project thought that these were inadequate or deficient or defective in any way. Now, we know because we've seen the photographs that we have turbidity resulted, but what we don't have in the record is any evidence that there was a failure of the standard of care, that the contractors in Caltrans didn't do what they'd done before, what worked in other situations, you know, what has worked in the past to prevent these sort of instances. So without that type of evidence in the record, I'm simply not sure what the rationale is for imposing the maximum liability for this type of situation. And just to further on this point, in case anyone thinks that Condition 7 was absolutely clear and that everyone understood at the time this construction took place what it meant, I just want to point out the fact that you know, even within the regional board staff, the prosecution team, and the advisor team have reached somewhat different conclusions in their interpretation of Condition 7. So with that, I think it needs to be taken into consideration when you consider what the contractors at the time of construction are facing on the job. Another example would be turbidity measurements. I want to just say on behalf of MCM that we understand with the proposed order the regional board's position on the importance of turbidity monitoring. And we understand that the need for the regional board to have certainty on the part of contractors that, that these sorts of requirements, this, the self-monitoring requirements, will be followed. But I also want to note that we did provide expert testimony at the hearing that it is a matter of industry practice that for minor violations, visual monitoring is something that's used. Now, I know this creates a situation where, you know, what the contractors are doing and what the regional board staff's expectations are kind of going in different directions. And that's a problem, but it's a problem that's resolved to some extent by the state's enforcement policy. And that policy says specifically that the regional board needs to consider the prevailing industry practices in deciding the amount of liability. And so, again, we understand the need of the regional board here for self-monitoring to take place. That meets the regional board's expectations, excuse me. But where the facts show that we have minor turbidity, that we have an industry practice that's been in place for some time, understandably probably now changing, and also that we have good faith efforts to comply, I think that those need to be reflected somewhere in the amount of liability for this proposed order. Finally, one additional example, there are these instances of sort of one-off liability. I'll use an example of there was one where soil was pushed from the top of a slope and fell down the slope. Now, if you've reviewed the biological monitor's photographs, and I know most of us probably have in exhaustive detail, you know, we've seen silt fencing and guards and rock barriers kind of strung across the slope specifically to prevent exactly this type of thing. Now, how exactly this soil was able to cascade down the slope in this situation, we don't know, because the record isn't well-developed enough for us to be able to determine exactly where it took place and how it avoided these barriers without any photographs. But we do have an understanding that there were absolutely best management practices in place, and that Caltrans devoted a lot of resources to making sure those were in place. And where we have an inadvertent appearing event like this, it just seems unreasonable to impose the maximum civil liability where we're not quite sure exactly what the facts were that led up to it in the first place. So just to close, I think our fundamental point here is that Water Code 13385 and the state's enforcement policy require that mitigating circumstances be taken into consideration when calculating the amount of liability. And here we have a proposed order which we agree with in many respects, but in other respects has very little discussion or analysis of the fact that best management practices were clearly used, that's reflected in the record all over, that workers were relying on how things have been done, on standard construction practices, that in this case didn't meet the regional board's expectations, and we understand that. That by its very nature, the certification requires the exercise of professional judgment. And what we heard about a year ago in hearing is that there was a lot of confusion about how that judgment should be applied and what the regional board's role was in advising Caltrans and advising MCM and people on the project as to what exactly they were supposed to do to comply with the certification. Still today, that doesn't seem to be crystal clear. And then finally, we just have to note that the turbidity, a lot of the discharges that took place were really exactly as was contemplated before the project ever began. And so in many respects, you could say that the way that this project was managed was entirely appropriate when you consider the ultimate gravity and seriousness of some of these discharges. The proposed order, we think, gives very short shrift to some of these circumstances surrounding the violations, and so we ask that the regional board just consider that and consider applying these in a more direct way before finalizing this order. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Hungerford.
I'd like to maybe not remind you, but at least acknowledge that
to Ms. Macedo, Mr. Jensen, Mr. Hungerford, that this order wasn't something that was ultimately drafted and decided by the advisory team. It was something that was prepared for this hearing panel, and in great review and deliberation, this hearing panel has had the opportunity to see its involvement to where it is. And if we go back to where we had our hearing in June, we spent a very long day going over testimony and talking about the facts and the evidence, and we took a lot of that into consideration. There was issues about multiple violations or multiple infractions for single violations and being held accountable monetarily several times for a single violation. We have considered that and reduced where appropriate, where there was instances where best management practices had been employed, had been pointed out, those were taken into consideration. Where there was an effort and ultimately in the end things had been cleaned up, that was also taken into consideration. And these were all items and issues that we have thought about and have all taken into consideration. So I want to give you some assurance there that it wasn't something that just advisory team had presented to our hearing panel and that we're just taking it at carte blanche. It's been a lot more than that. And we've taken a long look at this. With that, I'd like to open it up for any other questions or comments that my fellow panelists might have.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Massey.
First, I would like to thank everybody who has participated in this, particularly Mr. Hales, who took on the task of being the hearing officer here and took on a lot of extra work over what the rest of us have done. We saw this in June. We have had it in front of us in terms of paper. And the question in my mind really comes down to why are we going to or not going to find someone? And the answer in my mind is we don't want to see it again. That's a message for anybody, everybody that gets near the waters of the state of California. And in this case, for Caltrans, who frequently does, I personally would like to send a very strong message: don't mess with the water. That's ours. And so I would give you, Mr. Chair, a motion to accept this resolution. I also understand that there is a private contractor in this, and it is also a desire to make sure that they understand that when you are near the water, do it right. If you have a question, call someone. And with that, I would give you a motion to accept this resolution.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Oh, I will second that.
Okay. I'm going to go and take a roll call vote. Ms. Olson, I'm looking at my counsel to make sure this is a roll call or voice.
Oh, let's do a roll call because I did want to just add also that in addition to lowering the fine for multiple permit terms, there are also several where the evidence was ambiguous or could have not shown a violation. Those were also taken out of the order. I just wanted that clarified in the record. Roll call would be great.
Yeah, I guess a lot of instances where we took it was all as it was presented to us and taken into consideration. So thank you for adding that. And with that, I will start to my left in favor of adopting ACL order number R12012034. Mr. Corbett?
Aye.
Mr. Noren?
Aye.
Mr. Massey?
Aye.
Ms. Harris?
Aye.
Ms. Tynes?
Aye.
And myself, aye. Order passes. Thank you very much. Mr. Noren, Mr. Chairman, back to you.
I take the comm. All right, we've got a couple housekeeping, issues to finish up the day.